Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The Royals lineup is out today. Bubba Starling back in the lineup. The lineup goes as follows. Whit Merrifield, Adalberto Mondesi, Alex Gordon, Hunter Dozier, Jorge Soler, Chesler Cuthbert. Bubba Starling batting seventh and playing center field. Nicky Lopez and Cam Gallagher getting the start today after the Royals trade Martin Maldonado. That is the lineup for your 33-62 Kansas City Royals.
Get out and see Bubba, or you can catch the game tonight right here on 610 Sports Radio.
Coming up in 30 minutes, we will catch up with Mike Montgomery. He is the new Royals pitcher. He was traded for last night. We'll catch up with him coming up in 30 minutes. Someone on the text line asked, you guys all really think that the Chiefs are going to pay Patrick Mahomes $42 million a year? I believe that the starting point for Patrick Mahomes is 5 years, $200 million. If the Chiefs are not offering 5 years, $200 million to Patrick Mahomes, if I am Patrick Mahomes' agent, I tell him not to sign that contract. That contract is very much in play, and that is the baseline of what you should accept.
But these guys kind of keep setting the curve for the next guy, whether it's Russell Wilson's contract or Carson Wentz's contract. I think he's going to completely reset the mold and reset the market with Patrick Mahomes for how young he is and for what he's already done. I think 40 is the baseline for what he's going to get.
Yeah, 40 is the baseline.
Be a big jump, just for what it's worth. Right now, there's a tier at the top of about $35 million. I think he's going to go for years and overall salary as opposed to average. I bet you he ends up closer to 37.
So Russell's at 35, Roethlisberger's at 34, Rodgers is at 33.5, Carson Wentz is at 32, Matt Ryan is at 30. Those are the top five quarterback averages per season in the NFL.
And Pat deserves a little bit more. He's younger, he's better, he's more proven than a lot of those guys. In the case of Aaron Rodgers, I understand he's more proven, but he's a lot older.
Coming up in just a bit, we will get into the Mike Montgomery trade, as I really like the trade. I think the Mike Montgomery trade is one of the better trades that they've made during this new era of Royals baseball. So we all follow the NFL. I want to get you guys' thoughts on this. So I made a list because we've been talking a lot about Super Bowl or bust. I am at Super Bowl or bust. Yours is basically good season or bust for the Kansas City Chiefs. As long as they have a good season that you're proud of, this is a great
year
for the Chiefs.
That's not it at all. I think that they win 12 or 13 games. They host an AFC championship. I just understand that there's a little bit of gray area. It's not just black and white. You think it's either an A or an F, and I think they can get other grades besides that.
Yeah, so these are the teams that I would put in the same category as the Chiefs. There are no B's, there are no C's, there are no D's. It is a very simple, did you make the Super Bowl, did you miss the Super Bowl in terms of your level of expectation and disappointment? I think there are six teams that fall in that guideline. The Patriots, the Steelers, the Chiefs, the Chargers, the Saints, and the Rams. I think there are six teams currently in the NFL that I would have them under the same scope of boom or bust. The Patriots, for obvious reasons, the Steelers. Now, I don't think they are on the same tier as those other five teams, but the Steelers quarterback is 38 years old. You don't have too many more years to get peak Ben Roethlisberger where you're happy with going 10-6 and making the playoffs. That does nothing to enhance the legacy of Ben Roethlisberger. I think the urgency, not really knowing who their next quarterback's going to be, maybe you think it's Mason Rudolph, maybe it's not. I would put the Steelers in the list of Super Bowl or bust. The Chiefs, we already know why I have them in the category. The Los Angeles Chargers, similar reason to the Steelers. This could be the best lineup that Phillip Rivers has played with since the 14-2 Marty Schottenheimer years. You factor in his ability in the NFL, the way the rules are towards passing. You think about the other talent that they have around them. The Chargers are as talented as any team in the NFL. The Saints, who have been to the NFC Championship last year, should have went to the Super Bowl 2 years ago. They lost on one of the more improbable plays in the history of the NFL. The Saints are thinking Super Bowl or bust, and the Los Angeles Rams while they still have Jared Goff's rookie contract. I also made a list, and I called it playoff or bust. These are teams that I would have the same qualifications we have for the Chiefs of. It's an A or an F depending on if they go to the Super Bowl or not. You knock that down, and it's an A or an F depending on if they go to the Super Bowl or not. Obviously, more teams. Cleveland, Indianapolis, Chicago, Baltimore, Dallas, Minnesota, Houston, Philadelphia, Green Bay, and Seattle. So that's my playoff or bust teams as opposed to my Super Bowl or bust teams. New England, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, the Los Angeles Chargers, the Los Angeles Rams, and the New Orleans Saints. Do you disagree with any of the teams that I have?
Yeah, that's a lot to chew on. I guess I'll take the latter first. You mentioned teams like Chicago and Seattle. They made the playoffs last year. Isn't the expectation that they take the next step, like we're talking about the Chiefs? What's the difference?
Yeah, I wouldn't consider the Bears to be in the same situation when it comes to quarterback or coach. I would say that the Bears quarterback appears to be a limitation, where the Chiefs quarterback doesn't appear to be that way. That's why I think there's a difference between the Chiefs and the Bears.
Of your Super Bowl or bust teams, one of them just blew me away. Just blew me away. I have no problem with most of them. Obviously, the Rams made it to the Super Bowl last year. The Saints were as close as you could possibly be. The Chiefs were as close as you could possibly be. The Patriots are the Patriots. Everybody knows how I feel about the Chargers. The Steelers? You really think for a team that missed the playoffs last year, that no longer has Antonio Brown, that no longer has Le'Veon Bell, it's a Super Bowl or bust type season? I would say it's a playoff or bust type season. Certainly not a Super Bowl or bust type season for the Pittsburgh Steelers, who Las Vegas has right now at 18-1 odds to take down the championship.
I think when your quarterback is 38 years old and you are very firmly standing in being in a transition period, which you have not had to go through for the last 15 years, that again, I agree with you. I don't think the Steelers are in that same category as two, but when you've been to three Super Bowls with that quarterback and won two of them, I don't think we view Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers much differently if they go 10-6 this year and lose in the first round of the playoffs. I think that Ben Roethlisberger, where he's at in his career, he only is defined by winning and going to Super Bowls.
If you're curious what Las Vegas thinks, they have the Chiefs and the Patriots as co-favorites at 6-1, followed by the Rams and the Saints at 8-1, then the Colts, who none of us in this room believe in, at 12-1, followed by the Bears, the Eagles, the Packers, the Browns, and then two teams that we talk about a lot, at least recently, the Chargers are 18-1, as are the Pittsburgh Steelers. So for teams that we're talking about that have a chance, or it's a Super Bowl or buzz type season, the Chiefs are 6-1. The Chargers and the Steelers are 18-1. Pretty big difference.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, some of these teams, someone on the text line says, swap the Steelers with the Seahawks or the Colts. Do we feel like the Colts are Super Bowl or bust this season? I'm not an Indianapolis, no. And I'm also not as high on the Colts as many other players, or as many people seem to be. There appeared to be, to me, a pretty decently sized gap between the Colts and the truly elite teams last year in the NFL. And with Seattle, with the turnover on their roster, I find it hard to believe that there is going to be disappointment in Seattle if their team does not make the Super Bowl. We agree. Now, maybe Pittsburgh, and I just have a different feeling on, that's perfectly fine. But we agree. These other five teams, there will be significant disappointment from their fan base if they do not go to the Super Bowl. New England, Kansas City, both Los Angeles teams, and the Saints. There's not going to be significant disappointment, in my mind, if Cleveland doesn't go to the Super Bowl. They've won 13 games in the last 9 NFL seasons. They're not holding their team to the standard of, you got to go to the Super Bowl or someone's going to have to answer for it. Or Dallas. I don't think they're Super Bowl or bust. Or Chicago. So those are the only five teams defensive. We can go back and forth on Pittsburgh. That's my rationale for putting them on the list, though.
Dallas is at 18-1. The Bears are at 14-1. The Colts with the fifth best odds are just such a head scratcher. Guys, can you at least understand why outsiders believe in the Colts? Because I don't. I know I don't believe in them. BK doesn't either. Do you, C-Dot? But do you at least understand the love the Colts are getting? Because quite frankly, I don't see it.
Yeah, I don't get it. Honestly. I don't get why people are as high on the
Colts.
I
know they've got Andrew Luck. I like their coach. Their defense is fine. But comparing them to teams like the Patriots, the Chiefs, the Rams, the Saints, the Bears, the Eagles, I see a lot more flaws with the Colts and all these other great teams.
I kind of feel like what happens with the Colts. Maybe I understand a little bit more.
And they won a lot of games last year, got fat. Well, they won 10 of their last 11 games against bad football teams.
I think that people think Andrew Luck is younger than what he is. I hear him constantly grouped in with Mahomes and Carson Wentz and Jared Goff. He's not the same age as them. He's older than Russell Wilson. I think that's part of it. I don't know why it is. Maybe because he was hurt for so long that we felt like time stopped with Andrew Luck. I kind of feel like people think that Andrew Luck is 26 and he's 30. Like, I bet you if we polled the text line before I just said how old he was and asked you how old Andrew Luck is, some people are like, 26, 27. No, he's not 27. He's 30 and he's had major significant injuries in his NFL career.
BK, do you understand the love for the Colts? I know you don't believe in it, but do you at least understand it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very simple. I think it is good coach, good quarterback. People believe in the general manager because he had a really good draft last year, even though everybody should know that that's a little bit of a fool-hearted way to ultimately look at a team over the course of the long haul is, oh, he had one good draft. He must be a really great drafter. We'll see. We'll see with Chris Ballard. But that's what it is. And then they believe because he didn't go out and spend a bunch of money in free agency, he knows what he's doing. In fact, maybe it is He didn't go spend a bunch of money in free agency, and now his team's not going to be very good this year because he didn't spend the money that he needed to spend in free agency. So I understand where it's coming from to a degree. I just disagree with the prognostication that they're going to be one of the best teams in the AFC.
It's the combination of quarterback and coach. That's what it is, because in Dallas, I think some people believe in the quarterback, some people believe in the coach, but nobody thinks that's a great coach-quarterback combination. Everybody believes in Ben Roethlisberger. There's still questions, I think, when it comes to Mike Tomlin. Not Anthony. Everybody believes in Anthony Lynn. I don't know what you would say about Cleveland. The Packers have a new head coach. You can go up and down the line. Look at the teams that have the best quarterback and coach combinations. Those are all the favorites in the NFL.
I don't even think the Colts have great players on their team. Like, the love for the Colts is the most confusing thing in the NFL. To me, it is legitimately the most confusing thing in the NFL. I think that just about every part of their team is overvalued. I think the coach is overvalued. I think the quarterback is overvalued. I think their general manager is a little bit overvalued. Everything about their team, I think, is a little bit overhyped. I think a lot of it deals with the fact of we were told that Andrew Luck was supposed to be basically what Patrick Mahomes was. You remember, we were told that Luck was supposed to be the best quarterback prospect since John Elway.
And he was coming out of college.
But has he been that in the NFL? I'm with you. He was super hyped coming into the NFL. Has he done anything that would make you to believe he is the best quarterback of his generation?
No.
Has he done anything to make you think he's the best quarterback drafted in the last 10 years? I don't feel that way about Andrew Luck.
Probably not to either of those questions, but before he got injured, he was just shot like a rocket at the beginning of his career. He was great out the gate.
Was he ever as good as Patrick Mahomes is right now?
No. No. Hell no. But I think you could pretty much go up and down every quarterback in the league and ask me that same question, and you're going to get the same answer.
Yeah, so I'm asking then, do you think at any point we can make an argument that Andrew Luck was the best quarterback in the NFL? And the answer, I think, is pretty clearly no. We've never been in a position where it was even debatable. If you still take Aaron Rodgers over Mahomes, okay, I'll listen to it. I think Mahomes is better given the age and physical ability, but I'll listen to it. There's never been a time in Andrew Luck's career that we have legitimately been able to argue. I'd argue, was he as good as Carson Wentz a couple of years ago when Wentz was fully healthy? I don't know if he was that good.
What about 2014? He threw 40 touchdowns, led the league in touchdown throws that year. Maybe in 2014 you could have made
it. But last year, did he throw for 45 touchdowns last year? Not too shabby.
Would you put Andrew Luck's best year up against Cam Newton's best year? What year was better?
Yeah, Andrew Luck.
Yeah, probably.
You think so?
I don't know. The year Cam took him to the Super Bowl, won the MVP, he was pretty damn good.
Cam's MVP year was pretty elite.
He was awesome, but I would still take Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck in 2014 threw 4,800 yards and 40 touchdowns. He was amazing. We forget about 2014 because quickly fell off because of the injuries. He was awesome in 2014.
And big picture, I think that he's a better quarterback than Cam Newton is, whether now or projecting forward.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he's better than Cam. I think that I think that so many parts of the Colts have been overvalued, and I think it really starts at the quarterback position. Coming up in just a minute, we'll catch up with Mike Montgomery coming up at 4:30, so keep it locked in. But before that, I really like the Mike Montgomery trade. I think it could be the best deal we've had of this recent era. I'll explain coming up, Mr. Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive, coming up at 4:30, we will catch up with new Royals pitcher Mike Montgomery. Mike Montgomery will be on the show coming up in 15 minutes. Keep it locked in right here on 610 Sports Radio. Earlier today, Dayton Moore commented on the trade and the newest Royals pitcher, Mike Montgomery.
He clearly wants to start. We have an opportunity to start, as you guys know, with the trade that we made for Homer Bailey. And, Monty's kind of been used in a very versatile role over there. He started, he's pitched in the middle, he's pitched situational, and it's just a good opportunity to get him back and put him in the rotation and potentially 2 years of control mm-hmm. for us. And so the money pretty much is a swap. So okay. It's just a good baseball deal.
I like what Dayton had to say there at the end. I think this is a really good baseball deal. When you factor in Martin Maldonado, a player that shouldn't even have been on their team at the very beginning of the season, that is only on the team because Salvador Perez got hurt and is out for the season. Last minute, they had to sign somebody. They needed an able-bodied catcher. They got him, and they turned him into a pitcher who has 2 years of club control, some upside, and could potentially be a fourth or fifth starter for this team. I can't think and come up with a scenario in which the Martin Maldonado era as a Royal ends much better than how it's ended.
The Royals need help in the bullpen. The Royals are desperate for help when it comes to starting rotation, especially after trading away Homer Bailey a few days ago. So this fills the need. Again, if you're expecting a big splash, if you're expecting a Will Myers-type trade or Zach Greinke-type trade, Not going to happen.
I don't think anyone was expecting that when they traded Martin Maldonado, that they were going to get the same return as Zach Greinke.
I'm not talking about this trade. I'm talking about
I want to know that Royals fan that was like, how do they not get Lorenzo Cain and Alcides Escobar for Martin Maldonado?
Let me try to reword it, okay? I think there were some Royals fans that thought before the last couple of weeks that a player like Whit Merrifield might be available in the trade deadline. That's what would get you something back. It's going to be more like Diekman and Hamilton going forward. So these are the type of trades you can expect to happen before the trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, looking at it with the Royals, I mean, it's kind of clear what's going to happen. So this is from Mark Feinsand of MLB.com. So he went on to say that the Royals are listening to offers with Jorge Soler. I don't think they're going to trade Jorge Soler, but it makes sense that they would listen to offers on Jorge Soler. Also went on to say that they would need to be blown away in a deal to trade Whit Merrifield. Let me read you the tweets exactly. After trading Martin Maldonado last night, the Royals are in sell mode. According to a source, the focus over the next 2 weeks will be moving Billy Hamilton, Jake Diekman, Lucas Duda, and Ian Kennedy. The first three players are very easy to trade. It is simply what you get back in return. It's not that hard to trade Billy Hamilton, Jake Diekman, and Lucas Duda. They're not due a whole lot of money.
You gotta find somebody that wants them.
There's teams that would want them. It's simply back, what do we get back in return would be the thing. When it comes to Ian Kennedy, the Ian Kennedy is very simple. He's due $20 million left. How much of that are you willing to eat? Are you willing to eat $15 million to get him off your team and save $5 million? If you're willing to do that, you can trade Ian Kennedy. It really comes down to that. And then it also goes on to say more on the Royals. According to a source, Jorge Soler might be available at the right price, but as far as Whit Merrifield, KC would have to be blown away to trade him and his team-friendly contract. Feeling around the league is that Merrifield is staying put. They're not trading Whit Merrifield. I don't think that they've ever seriously entertained trading Whit Merrifield. And like most players, if somebody comes in and gives you a really sweet offer on Jorge Soler, you would listen on it. But when it says might be available at the right price, it tells me that you're not that interested in trading Jorge Soler.
When it comes to Diekman, somebody's going to want him. He will be gone before the trade deadline.
I'm sorry. I thought you were done.
I was going to go down the line. When it comes to Billy Hamilton, I presume somebody's going to want him. He hasn't exactly shown out this year. He's basically been what Billy Hamilton was. But again, somebody's going to want a speedster to come play the outfield. Lucas Duda, I'm actually not sure anybody's going to take him off your hands. And Ian Kennedy, I'm 50-50 at this point if the Royals are going to be able to deal him or not. Would they like to? They'd love to. I'm just not sure they're going to be able to work out a deal. For Jorge Soler, you're going to get calls. Something tells me that a power hitter that's on pace to hit 40 home runs is just not coming into the prime of his career. Now, he's a DH, so he's only got a limited amount of value, especially to National League teams. But I would be a little bit surprised if the Royals end up dealing Jorge Soler at this point.
Kind of like how you always say there only needs to be one team. Mm-hmm. There only needs to be one team that's interested in trading Ian Kennedy. That one team is the Royals. If the Royals want to eat some of the money and just call it a loss with Ian Kennedy, I think they will have suitors when it comes to Ian Kennedy. No one is going to let them off the hook for that contract. They owe Ian Kennedy $16.5 million next season. Why would you take that contract if you're another team? If I'm calling about Ian Kennedy, I tell the Royals this. Hey, we're happy to take Ian Kennedy, but you got to be willing to buy at least 70% of this contract. Save 30% on the dollar. You already owe him that money. It's guaranteed. It's baseball. But no team is going to save the Royals from that terrible contract they gave Ian Kennedy.
No, the Royals would love to get rid of that deal. The Royals would probably love to get rid of the Alex Gordon deal. That's easier said than done. I'm not sure they're going to take that deal off their hands the same way. I'm sure Jake Diekman's gone. There's no way he's a Royal a week and a half from now. Same thing with Billy Hamilton. When it comes to Ian Kennedy, again, I'm 50-50. The Royals are going to be able to find a trade partner for him.
I will say this, though, when it comes to Mike Montgomery. I think we are starting to see how the Royals will typically acquire pitching. So we did this. These are the Royals pitchers since 2013, and this is how they've acquired them. James Shields, Jeremy Guthrie, they traded for those players. We agree. Shields was a splash trade. Guthrie was just a one man's trash is another man's treasure. It was basically like what happened with Eric Murray and Emmanuel Agba. It was the exact same trade, just in a baseball.
In hindsight,
form.
The Royals end up winning both those trades.
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah.
Mid-level signings. Vargas, Volquez, free agents, but not huge money. Jason Hamill, same concept. Ian Kennedy, they spent a little bit of money on Ian Kennedy.
A lot of money on Ian Kennedy.
Irvin Santana, short contract. Bruce Chinn, short contract. Chris Young, short contract. They went the Rule 5 draft to acquire Brad Keller, and then they've had their homegrown guys, Duffy, Ventura, and Jacob Junis. This is typically how the Royals are going to acquire starting pitching. You've always asked, where's the pitching coming from? I think we know what they're going to do. They're going to try to kind of scrape it together, nickel and dime it together, whether it's their own prospects and bringing guys up through the system or making trades similar to what they've done today. Or they'll get to a point similar to where they were in 2013. They have a prospect like Will Myers or Bobby Witt Jr. or whoever you think it's going to be. There's a starting pitcher that they really like, and then they'll go trade for that starting pitcher once they feel like they're ready to win immediately.
Those guys in your system, though, better succeed more than they have so far. Danny Duffy, in principle, was a nice draft pick. In actual production, not so much. Your Donna Ventura, obviously, rest in peace. Jacob Junis, I think that some people still have really high hopes for Jacob Junis. I'm not one of them. Brad Keller obviously had a great season last year, struggling a little bit more this year. The problem isn't that they don't have enough pitching. The problem is the young pitching hasn't succeeded at the big league level like maybe Dayton thought it was going to.
I mean, when you signed Martin Maldonado, this was the best case scenario. You were not going to win this season, similar to signings you've done in the past, whether it was Lucas Duda. Two times you've signed Lucas Duda, Billy Hamilton this year. The hope always was going to be that those guys put themselves in a position that at the trade deadline, you could get something of value. You have got something of value with Mike Montgomery. You've got a guy that could either be a decent closer for you, a decent relief pitcher for you, or someone who could be a fourth and a fifth starter. You cannot ask for much more than out of the 1 year you got out of Martin Maldonado, in my opinion. Coming up, we will catch up with Mike Montgomery. He joined us earlier today. We'll play that conversation for you. New Royal starting pitcher Mike Montgomery joins us coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
Thanks so much for listening. It is The Drive. Coming up in 30 minutes, we will get into the top stories of the day in Kansas City during the hits. Earlier today, you and I got the opportunity to catch up with the newest Kansas City Royal, Mike Montgomery. If you remember, Mike Montgomery was drafted by the Kansas City Royals, was traded and part of the James Shields trade. He now finds himself in a full circle back to Kansas City. Our conversation with Mike Montgomery started with, very simple. What is it like to be back here in Kansas City with the Royals?
I'm looking forward to it. You know, I had a good run here in Chicago and got drafted by Kansas City. So I spent 4 years there and, you know, the same front office is there, some of the same players that I played in the minor leagues with. So it's definitely exciting, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity.
Mike, you talk about being here in Kansas City previously. What is it like to kind of have your career come full circle? Drafted by Kansas City, traded to Seattle, traded to the Cubs, and now back in Kansas City.
I mean, absolutely. It's, you know, it's poetry. So, you know, go from the team you get drafted by and you end up back there. And that's kind of how baseball works. You end up in, you never know what's going to happen. You never know where you're going to play, different spots, different guys that you might have played with, play with again. Yeah, for me, you know, from a baseball standpoint, it's kind of a new chance. You know, this year really just opportunities in Chicago weren't there for me. And, you know, I had a couple really good years and, you know, obviously the World Series year. But, yeah, I'm really excited to just kind of bring some of the stuff from here. And I know that they got a good group of guys there that, you know, they're trying to learn how to win baseball games. And, you know, for me, if I can help out in any way and, you know, do my job and take care of my role, then, you know, that's what I'm looking forward to. You know, I've obviously learned a lot since the days that I was here when I was younger. And I've been with a couple different teams since then, and, you know, you just gain experiences, and life's a lot different now than when a lot of times when you're younger. So it's definitely something that it's exciting, you know, and I'm looking forward to it.
Mike, in the past you've been used both in the bullpen and in the starting rotation. How important is it for you to be a starter in the big leagues?
Yeah, you know, I think just getting in a consistent routine and having a consistent role is really what I was looking forward to. And, you know, I just really wasn't there in Chicago this year, and which is fine. I tried to kind of be the super utility guy the best I could, and I've had some success doing that. And, but yeah, you know, for someone to be able to bring me in and tell me they want me in the rotation, you know, that's kind of what I was looking forward to going into this year. And for now it's going to be, hey, you know, we got 60 some games left. Try to, you know, go out there and bring what I can. I feel good physically. You know, I might not be fully stretched out, but not pitching a lot this year has kind of, you know, gave me some, my health. My health is good, and I think that's a good sign for me. I've thought of throwing the ball well, and, you know, I haven't had the best results so far this year, but, you know, I know what I'm capable of. I know what I can bring, and for me to just have that opportunity to get back in a rotation is really what I wanted. So I'm very excited about that.
Right now we're talking to new Royals pitcher Mike Montgomery, who came over from the Chicago Cubs yesterday in a trade. You talked about being stretched out. How long of a process do you think that will take for you to get stretched out where you feel comfortable enough to pitch 5, 6, 7 innings?
Not long. You know, I think at this point in the year, we're already mid-July. I've been stretched out at earlier times in this year. I mean, I know about 2 weeks ago, I think I threw 40 pitches. So in my mind, I think I could probably go 50, 60 pitches right away, and maybe 40, 45 to 60 in that range. It's kind of dependent on how it's gone. And then I think from there, you know, it'll just kind of bump up even more. If it was earlier in the year, it might be harder, you know, but I've been throwing bullpens every day pretty much. I've been getting off the bump, you know, getting ready. I don't think it'll take long.
Mike, one thing I picked up in this conversation is you seem really passionate about being a starter. I saw that you had requested a trade early in the season from the Cubs, wanting those opportunities. What makes you so passionate about being a starter in the major leagues?
I mean, it's what I came up doing. You know, I came up as a starter. You know, I had to go to the bullpen to kind of break into the big leagues. And I understand, like, you know, there's a lot of value in being able to do both. And, you know, I took pride in that, and I still do. I just, you know, I've always wanted to be a starter. And, you know, I don't know what it is other than just, you know, that's what I'm passionate about. I think that's what I can be the best at. And, you know, that's where I really take pride in. And I've been able to be one. You know, I've gotten made 19 starts last year, and so I threw the ball well for the most of the part of that, and I think it's where I can help the team out most. I think that's where I can provide the most value to a team, and I think that's what it's about, you know, providing value and helping the team win games.
It's not all bad, though, in the bullpen, though. Mike, a couple of years ago, you were on the mound when the Cubs won the World Series. What was that experience like?
Yeah, that definitely something that will be remembered, and, you know, that was kind of a crazy year for me as well. I got traded that year, and ended up going to the Cubs, kind of being the swing man, starting, relieving. And, you know, in the playoff run, I got in a good groove, you know, and I pitched in 5 of the 7 World Series games. I was able I was just probably at the best form, you know, I could be at the time. And things worked out, and, you know, I ended up getting faced one hitter at the end, but, you know, it ended up being, you know, the most important one. And, I learned a lot. You know, you learn what it takes to get to that point, you know, and looking back, all the hard work, but, you know, what everybody on the team, you know, their mindset was when we won, and, you know, the clubhouse chemistry, everything that made us great that year, you know, you take with you, and those experiences never leave. So, you know, having that experience, and I know there's Kansas City won it the year before. I remember watching that. And some of those guys are still there. So they remember that feeling of being on top. It's something that you bring with you for the rest of your career.
Right now we're talking to Mike Montgomery. He is the new Kansas City Royals pitcher brought over in a trade from the Chicago Cubs. You talked about the front office staff being the same as when you were here the first time. What is your relationship like with Dayton Moore?
I think it's great. You know, I've even kept in contact with him over the years here and there, and after the World Series and at different times. And, yeah, I think it was a great time there, and you know, I was obviously a young kid back then, and, you know, now I got a wife and a 3-month-old, so things are a little bit different, but obviously a lot of respect. You know, he's been doing this a long time, and you know, it's just sometimes it's good to, you know, cross paths again, and I think that's what happened. And again, yeah, I mean, it's just for me looking forward to just bringing what I can to the team and, you know, helping them win games. And that's what it's about. I think when everybody's mindset is all about winning, you know, and learning what it takes to win, that's when you make playoff runs and win World Series. So that's definitely something I'm looking forward to.
You talk about the changes in your life. What's different with each trade? You've been traded multiple times. This one seems a little bit different circumstances. You asked to be traded for a new opportunity. You go back to a comfortable place that now will give you that opportunity. Talk about how your life has evolved. How has each trade kind of been for you personally?
Yeah, they've been a lot different. The first time was an off-season trade, and it was more pissed off. And then, you know, getting traded from Chicago to or from Seattle to Chicago, it was kind of a shock. And you know, you get traded from a team that didn't make playoffs to a first place team that year, and then eventually World Series winners. That really, it's just different. And now, obviously, circumstances are different in this one. But I've grown up a lot in the game, and you know, I've been around and I've seen a lot of good players, played with a lot of good players, and you kind of learn and take it, every experience you can with you. And I think that's what you got to do in this game. You know, it's just a tough game, and you just got to, you know, go as hard as you can, as long as you can, and that's the mindset that I got.
And that was new Royals pitcher Mike Montgomery joining us today on The Drive. Really thankful that he made time to come on, and you guys could hear from the newest member of the Kansas City Royals. I like the trade. Again, given what the Royals gave up in Martin Maldonado, who is not going to be on the team past this season, for you to turn him into a pitcher who has 2 years of club control that the Royals are obviously very familiar with, I think this is a very good trade for the Royals.
And they need a starter. So I don't know how long Mike Montgomery is going to be around. I don't think he's part of the long-term plan. But short-term, you trade Homer Bailey. You need another person in the starting rotation. He's got experience there. He wants to be a starting pitcher. Yeah, I like the move.
And, I mean, the long-term future of the Royals, he's under club control for the next 2 years. Let's just find out. Like, I'm not willing to say one way or the other. I mean, the most starts that Mike Montgomery has been giving in a season is 19. He's going to be given every opportunity to start the rest of this season and next season. Let's see what he does with it. He's clearly passionate, and I want to be a starter in the major league. If you want to be a starter in the major league, there's no better team to try to do that for than the Kansas City Royals, because they ain't got no starting pitching.
And when you talk about the future, Martin Maldonado was not part of the near future. That's Salvi's job, at least for the next couple of years. So, again, I think the Royals made out well in this trade.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll get into the top stories of the day in Kansas City. But first, we'll talk a little bit about the NFL. There is one thing I learned about NFL players yesterday. I'll share it with you coming up. It's
The Drive. The Drive. Weekdays, 2 to 6.
Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll get into the top stories of the day in Kansas City. The update, the traffic update the woman was sharing where she was talking about eBay got me thinking. I mean, obviously the people over at Amazon are incredible smart people. Now, they're not smart enough to get their wife to sign a prenup where you got to give them $38 billion when you break up. That's neither here nor there, but they are very smart. They figured out a way to have two Black Fridays. Amazon Prime Day is Black Friday in July. It is the exact same deals, the same air fryer that you were going to buy in November for Christmas. They found a way to package to you in July. Absolutely. I don't know who thought of Amazon Prime Day, but whoever thought of that should get a promotion at Amazon, because they found a way to essentially create Black Friday in the middle of the year.
Big deal. We had Christmas twice on 610. We had the real Christmas. Then we had, remember, Christmas in July last week. It was great. The Flyaway Friday, the Thirsty Thursday, the Wifey Wednesday was awesome.
Yeah, you're right. I didn't receive any money from it. I assume that outside of Black Friday, the two Amazon Prime Days are their biggest days of the year. That's what I would guess. I don't know for a fact. I haven't seen the books over there at Amazon. I'm going to guess that those are the two biggest days of the year, that the fact that they just created them out of, hey, we're going to give you exclusive deal on products.
Genius.
Hey, that TV that's $325, we'll give it to you for $275. Look, you save $50, that you can spend that $50 now to buy an Amazon Fire Stick. Just an incredible hustle they're running over there. Before we get to the Chiefs, I'm a little worried about you, my
Why?
Friend. I'm a little worried about you.
What's
because you were telling us how much you enjoy Table Rock Lake. You probably mentioned Table Rock Lake 300 times.
Yeah, it was a great time.
The 4th of July. You had a really good time. I don't know if you've seen, but there's alligators around in lakes. There was an alligator in Chicago, Illinois. Now, I don't know much about alligators. I try to stay far away from them as much as I can. I didn't know that alligators lived in Chicago. I don't know how the alligator got there. They started calling him Chance the Snapper is what they were calling. They gave him a name in Chicago. I would stay away. But that's not the only other alligator sighting
really?
That we had. This was in Tennessee. Listen to this. People are asking, or the police are asking people to stop flushing drugs down the drain for fear of what they're calling meth alligators. The Laredo Police Department in Tennessee posted on Facebook saying that sewer pipes go to treatment ponds where you also find ducks, geese, and alligators. They say the Tennessee River down in North Alabama had enough methed up animals over the past few weeks. Listen to this one.
Nothing worse than a gator with a meth addiction.
Listen to this. I'm starting to think this is fake news. Listen to this, BK. Listen to this. The police are asking the public to call them if they need to dispose of drugs so they can do so safely. I don't think this is about alligators. This is a sting operation.
Yeah,
this is a sting operation.
Hi, is this the cops? Yeah, I got a little bit of crack here. Is there any way that you come and get it from me?
This is the
sting
operation.
Yeah, come get my meth. I just used it, but I've got a little extra over here. And so if you could take it away so these alligators don't get messed
with. Is this 911? I got a bunch of weed here, like bricks of weed, the good stuff. I just want to let you know.
So this is what they want me to think. I'm serious. This is what the police want me to think in Laredo Police Department. And maybe this is the case, that if you have some additional methamphetamine, you were supposed to call them and say, how does that phone conversation work? Hey, I have some extra methamphetamine. I've already used a little bit, but I don't want to use the rest of it. I was thinking about flushing it down the toilet.
Oh, don't do that. The gators will get it.
But I'm afraid of the well-being of the ecosystem. Can you guys come and pick it up for me? This is the stink. There are no meth alligators. This is the sting operation.
I'm going to tell you how it works. About 5 minutes later, the cop car arrives at your door. Obviously, sirens off because they don't want to alert you. And about 2 minutes after that, you're in handcuffs. And then you're in jail. That's how that goes down.
Okay, I'm just telling you what I read. It seemed like...
But save the gators.
It seemed like a sting operation to me. I can sense these things a mile away. That felt like a sting operation. So, I'll give you the choice. Which one do you want to talk about? You want to talk about Miko Hardman?
I want to talk about meth gators.
You want to talk about Miko Hardman or the Chargers? Your two loves. You have two...
Oh,
BK,
that's tough.
Sean has two loves on this show. Three, four. The Zambezi Zinger.
I love the Zinger.
Farrah Fawcett.
Love Farrah Fawcett.
Miko Hardman, the Los Angeles Chargers. You tell me which one of those four you want to talk about, because I'm prepared to go in any direction here.
I've got a fifth love that you didn't bring up, Bubba Starling.
My
that's
bad.
Really neither
no,
here nor
right.
there.
No, you're right.
So we can't keep talking meth gators?
I don't know what else to say other than it appears to be a sting operation.
I don't know if I'd rather come across a gator that's on or not on meth, but really neither here nor there. Let's talk Miko Hardman.
Okay, let's talk about Miko Hardman. So we did this math. I believe you were the one that did this, so you could find a roundabout way to talk about Miko Hardman. The Chiefs last year lost 113 targets. They didn't lose 300. That's a lot of targets.
That would have been a record.
113 targets from last season. Where do you think they are going to go? Because of guys they lost from last season who got some of those targets. Chris Conley obviously got his share. Kareem Hunt got his share. And Spencer Ware also got a piece. They are now gone. So there is now a hole for 113 targets this upcoming season. Where do you think they're going to go? Because if you think Miko Hardman is getting 70 catches this season, 100 of those targets are going to him.
Don't forget, Tyreek Hill is also probably, we don't know yet, going to be out for a couple of games. That's another, call it 20 or 30 targets. So instead of that 113 number, it's going to be more like 130 or 140 that are available for new players or at least for Pat to spread around this year. Obviously, Sammy Watkins is going to get more targets than he got last year. I think Damian Williams is going to take a share of those. But Kareem Hunt got a lot of targets when he was on the field, out of the backfield also. DeMarcus Robinson should have more production than he had last year. DeMarcus Robinson was so head-scratching because everybody, and I mean everybody, put up numbers in Pat's system except for DeMarcus Robinson. He was just the same old whatever. He had like 250 yards. So I think Sammy gets the bulk of significantly more attempts than he saw last year. I know you don't like the answer. It's Miko Hardman. Miko Hardman is going to get the bulk of the extra opportunities that were on the field last year.
Okay, so if you think if there was 113 last year, you think it's maybe 130
or
140.
Yeah, with Tyreek being suspended a couple games.
How many of those targets do we think go to Miko Hardman? Because I think that Damian Williams is going to get a healthy amount of targets this year. I think he's going to get a very healthy amount this year. How many of those extra ones do we think go to Miko Hardman? Because I'm going to guess if you're going to say the answer is 50 or 60, he ain't getting 70 catches on 60 targets this year.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. I'm not good at math, but I can do that math. Let me ask you this. Do you think Sammy's going to play a full season? Honestly, do you think Sammy's going to play a full season? Because if not, we have to add a bigger number.
I would don't because he didn't play a full season last year.
Either way, we're talking about him being the one who's going to get more targets. He's going to be the benefactor. So if he gets injured, I don't think that's going to happen. I think he'd get the same number of targets that he got last year. Then you're taking Tyreek off the field for a little bit of time. Then you're taking Sammy off the field for a little bit of time. Travis Kelce is going to get a few more attempts. He got a ton last year at the tight end position. Damian Williams is probably going to get more pass attempts than even Kareem Hunt got. But the bulk of it, I think he's going to get 80 passes thrown his way as rookie Miko Hardman.
I mean, last year, I
know that's a huge number, by the way, especially for a second-round draft pick. I just understand the offense that he plays in and the opportunities that he's going to get with other wide receivers probably not being on the field.
Last year, Sammy Watkins had 40 catches and 55 targets. I would set the over-under on targets this year at Sammy Watkins for 85. that factors in injury, that factors in all that, I'd give it 85 targets. That's 30 more than he got last season. I think that Damian Williams is going to get a healthy amount. I think Damian Williams and Carlos Hyde are going to be very involved in the passing game. If you set the over-under me right now on targets, Mecole Hardman, I set it like 45 this year.
Really?
I don't think he gets
Chris much
more.
Conley had 52 last year. I think that's around the range that you're going to be looking for Mecole.
Yeah,
And that might be even a little bit too high.
There's a reason the Chiefs traded up to get this guy in the second round. You could counter that with saying, yeah, because it happened on draft night, and they thought that Tyreek Hill was going to be suspended, and I would certainly listen to that argument. But you don't trade up in the second round when you need cornerbacks, when you need linebackers, when you need a bunch of different positions to add a luxury. They're going to put him on the field early and often. That's why they traded up in the second round to get him, not to keep him on the bench.
I want to look and see how many guys. So I just want to know how many targets do you think he gets this upcoming season?
75, 80.
I just
like
want to find who the comparison is for a guy that got that many.
I know
targets
it's a big number, but also you have to factor in these things that he plays with Patrick Mahomes, who threw for 5,000 yards. That's a lot of targets. And I know that I keep beating a dead horse here. At some point, Tyreek Hill is not going to be on the field. It's going to be 2, 4, 6. We'll find out what that is. At some point, most likely, because he's only played one full season, Sammy Watkins is not going to be on the field. So when you talk about it now, in July, he's not that important. Once push comes to shove and the season begins and guys are suspended and injured, then it becomes of paramount importance.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. If you think it's going to be around 80, kind of giving you a comparison last year, Alshon Jeffrey had 92 targets. Jimmy Graham had 89 targets. I'm kind of looking at it, trying to find someone. Jordy Nelson last year had 88 targets for his team. A.J. Green had 87, but he was pretty banged up. Amari Cooper had 76 last year between the Cowboys and Oakland. That's a little bit of a comparison on what target's going to look
like. Yeah, again, 80's a big number, and I recognize that. I also recognize that none of those wide receivers that you gave me plays in Andy Reid's offense with Patrick Mahomes. That automatically gives you more opportunities.
I will say this really quickly when it comes to DeMarcus Robinson. I have officially given up on DeMarcus Robinson. We talk a lot about the Mecole Hardman effect and what it means with Tyreek Hill. Do they trade up to go get Mecole Hardman if they feel really confident in DeMarcus Robinson this year? Because DeMarcus Robinson, we talk about guys in, like, because one of your big things with Mecole Hardman is opportunity. No Sammy Watkins, no Tyreek Hill. Guys had the chance to step up last year. Chris Conley had the chance to step up last year, didn't do it. DeMarcus Robinson had the chance to step up last year. They let Chris Conley walk in free agency, and they then drafted a wide receiver in the second round to essentially jump over DeMarcus Robinson. I ain't counting on a whole lot for DeMarcus Robinson this year. I'll set the over-under on targets for him at 25 this year, and I'll take the under. I don't think he's going to be very involved in the offense.
I would say if DeMarcus Robinson was a lot better than he is, they would have never had to go out and get Sammy Watkins.
I don't know about that. I mean, Sammy Watkins, when healthy, is a dynamic player. I don't think DeMarcus Robinson has ever given you a reason to think that he's an above-average player.
Dynamic, and now we're talking about the definition of a word. I've never thought that Sammy Watkins was a dynamic NFL player. Clemson, he was.
In theory, he is.
No.
When he was with Buffalo,
you didn't think he was dynamic?
He was one of the best receivers in the league his first 2 years.
For a rookie, he was really good. He was never one of the best receivers in the league. Sammy Watkins, you can throw stats out there. I'm sure you've got him. I know he had 1,000 yards. What was that, his first or second year? Yeah. Sammy Watkins has never been one of the best receivers in the NFL. That's a stretch.
Yeah, I don't think that, but I mean, you cannot be one of the best receivers and still be dynamic.
Especially on this team.
I think he's one of the best receivers in the league in 2015.
He's certainly part of the best duo that the Chiefs have ever had. There's no question about that.
Like, I would say Diggs from Minnesota. I would not consider him to be a dynamic wide receiver. I think he's one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. Like, I think he's a really productive player. I think that Sammy Watkins, his first 2 years at Buffalo, was about what Stephon Diggs is currently from Minnesota.
Hopefully he stays on the field and we'll get a chance to find out.
Coming up in just a little bit, we will get into the top stories of the day in Kansas City. The Royals made, I would say, a nice trade. I want to say major trade. They made a nice trade. We'll talk about it coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive. 610 Sports Radio.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.